Until there was an army. It's dangerous, though. You know how unpredictable automatons are.
Uh-huh,
I said. We'd had our share of bad experiences with them. You're seriously thinking about activating it? I have Daedalus's notes, she said. I think I can, here we go. She pressed the tip of Seward's boot, and the statue stood up, its quill and paper ready. What's he gonna do? I muttered. Take a memo? Shh, Annabeth said.
Hello, William.
Bill, I suggested.
Bill?
Oh, shut up, Annabeth told me. The statue tilted its head, looking at us with blank metal eyes. Annabeth cleared her throat.
Hello, Governor Seward. Command sequence. Daedalus 23. Defend Manhattan. Begin activation.
Seward jumped off his pedestal. He hit the ground so hard his shoes cracked the sidewalk. Then he went clanking off toward the east.
He's probably going to wake up Confucius, Annabeth guessed.
What? I said.
Another statue on division. The point is, they'll keep waking each other up until they're all activated.
And then?
Hopefully they defend Manhattan.
Do they know we're not the enemy?
I think so.
That's reassuring. I thought about all the bronze statues in the parks, plazas, and buildings of New York. There had to be hundreds, maybe thousands. Then a ball of green light exploded in the evening sky. Greek fire, somewhere over the East River. We have to hurry, I said, and we ran for the Vespa. We parked outside Battery Park, at the lower tip of Manhattan, where the Hudson and East Rivers came together and emptied into the bay. Wait here, I told Annabeth.
Percy, you shouldn't go alone.
Well, unless you can breathe underwater. She sighed.
You are so annoying sometimes.
Like when I'm right? Trust me, I'll be fine. I've got the curse of Achilles now. I'm all invincible and stuff. Annabeth didn't look convinced.
Just be careful. I don't want anything to happen to you. I mean, because we need you for the battle.
I grinned. Back in a flash. I clambered down the shoreline and waded into the water. Just for you non-sea god types out there, don't go swimming in New York Harbor. It may not be as filthy as it was in my mom's day, but that water will still probably make you grow a third eye or have mutant children when you grow up. I dove into the murk and sank to the bottom. I tried to find the spot where the two rivers' currents seemed equal, where they met to form the bay. I figured that was the best place to get their attention.
Hey!
I shouted in my best underwater voice. The sound echoed in the darkness.
I heard you guys are so polluted, you're embarrassed to show your faces. Is that true?
A cold current rippled through the bay, churning up plumes of garbage and silt.
I heard the East River is more toxic, I continued.
But the Hudson smells worse, or is it the other way around? The water shimmered. Something powerful and angry was watching me now. I could sense its presence, or maybe two presences. I was afraid I'd miscalculated with the insults. What if they just blasted me without showing themselves? But these were New York River gods. I figured their instinct would be to get in my face. Sure enough, two giant forms appeared in front of me. At first, they were just dark brown columns of silt, denser than the water around them. Then they grew legs, arms, and scowling faces. The creature on the left looked disturbingly like a Telkine. His face was wolfish. His body was vaguely like a seal's. Sleek black, with flipper hands and feet. His eyes glowed radiation green. The dude on the right was more humanoid. He was dressed in rags and seaweed, with a chainmail coat made of bottle caps and old plastic six-pack holders. His face was blotchy with algae,
and his beard was overgrown. His deep blue eyes burned with anger. The seal, who had to be the god of the East River, said,
"Are you trying to get yourself killed, kid? Or are you just extra stupid?"
The bearded spirit of the Hudson scoffed,
"You're the expert on stupid, East."
"Watch it, Hudson," East growled. "Stay on your side of the island and mind your business."
"Or what? You'll throw another garbage barge at me?"
They floated toward each other, ready to fight. "Hold it," I yelled. "We've got a bigger problem."
"The kid's right," East snarled. "Let's both kill him. Then we'll fight each other."
"Sounds good," Hudson said.
Before I could protest, 1,000 scraps of garbage surged off the bottom and flew straight at me from both directions. Broken glass, rocks, cans, tires. I was expecting it, though. The water in front of me thickened into a shield. The debris bounced off harmlessly. Only one piece got through, a big chunk of glass that hit my chest and probably should have killed me, but it shattered against my skin. The two river gods stared at me.
"Son of Poseidon?" East asked.
I nodded.
"Took a dip in the Styx?"
Hudson asked.
"Yup."
They both made disgusted sounds.
"Well, that's perfect," East said. "Now how do we kill him?"
"We could electrocute him,"
Hudson mused.
"If I could just find some jumper cables."
"Listen to me," I said. "Kronos' army is invading Manhattan."
"Don't you think we know that?" East asked. "I can feel his boats right now. They're almost across."
"Yup,"
Hudson agreed.
"I got some filthy monsters crossing my waters, too."
"So stop them," I said. "Drown them. Sink their boats."
"Why should we?" Hudson grumbled. "So they invade Olympus? What do we care?"
"Because I can pay you." I took out the sand dollar my father had given me for my birthday. The river god's eyes widened.
"It's mine," East said. "Give it here, kid, and I promise none of Kronos' scum are getting across the East River."
"Forget that," Hudson said. "That sand dollar's mine, unless you want me to let all those ships cross the Hudson."
"We'll compromise." I broke the sand dollar in half. A ripple of clean, fresh water spread out from the break as if all the pollution in the bay were being dissolved. "You each get half," I said. "In exchange, you keep all of Kronos' forces away from Manhattan."
"Oh, man,"
Hudson whimpered, reaching out for the sand dollar.
"It's been so long since I was clean."
"The power of Poseidon," the East River murmured. "He's a jerk, but he sure knows how to sweep pollution away."
They looked at each other, then spoke as one.
"It's a deal!"
I gave them each a sand dollar half, which they held reverently. "The invaders?" I prompted. East flicked his hand.
"They just got sunk."
Hudson snapped his fingers.
"Bunch of hellhounds just took a dive."
"Thank you," I said. "Stay clean." As I rose toward the surface, East called out,
"Hey, kid, anytime you got a sand dollar to spend, come on back, assuming you live."
"Curse of Achilles," Hudson snorted. "They always think that'll save them, don't they?"
"If he only knew,"
East agreed. They both laughed, dissolving into the water. Back on the shore, Annabeth was talking on her cell phone, but she hung up as soon as she saw me. She looked pretty shaken. "It worked," I told her. "The rivers are safe."
"Good," she said, "because we've got other problems,
Michael, you just called? Another army is marching over the Williamsburg Bridge. The Apollo cabin needs help. And Percy, the monster leading the enemy? It's the Minotaur.
Chapter 11. We break a bridge. Fortunately, Blackjack was on duty. I did my best taxicab whistle, and within a few minutes, two dark shapes circled out of the sky. They looked like hawks at first, but as they descended, I could make out the long, galloping legs of Pegasi.
Yo, boss!
Blackjack landed at a trot, his friend Pork Pie right behind him.
Man, I thought those wind gods were gonna knock us to Pennsylvania until we said we were with you.
Thanks for coming, I told him. Hey, why do Pegasi gallop as they fly anyway? Blackjack whinnied.
Why do humans swing their arms as they walk? I don't know, boss. It just feels right. Where to?
We need to get to the Williamsburg Bridge, I said. Blackjack lowered his neck.
You're darn right, boss. We flew over it on the way here, and it don't look good. Hop on.
On the way to the bridge, a knot formed in the pit of my stomach. The Minotaur was one of the first monsters I'd ever defeated. 4 years ago, he'd nearly killed my mother on Half-Blood Hill. I still had nightmares about that. I'd been hoping he would stay dead for a few centuries, but I should have known my luck wouldn't hold. We saw the battle before we were close enough to make out individual fighters. It was well after midnight now, but the bridge blazed with light. Cars were burning. Arcs of fire streamed in both directions as flaming arrows and spears sailed through the air. We came in for low pass, and I saw the Apollo campers retreating. They would hide behind cars and snipe at the approaching army, setting off explosive arrows and dropping caltrops in the road, building fiery barricades wherever they could, dragging sleeping drivers out of their cars to get them out of harm's way. But the enemy kept advancing. An entire phalanx of Dracaenae marched in the lead, their shields locked together, spear tips bristling over the top. An occasional arrow would connect with their snaky trunks, or a neck, or a chink in their armor, and the unlucky snake woman would disintegrate. But most of the Apollo arrows glanced harmlessly off their shield wall. About 100 more monsters marched behind them. Hellhounds leaped ahead of the line from time to time. Most were destroyed with arrows, but one got hold of an Apollo camper and dragged him away. I didn't see what happened to him next. I didn't want to know.
There!
Annabeth called from the back of her Pegasus. Sure enough, in the middle of the invading legion was old Beefhead himself. The last time I'd seen the Minotaur, he'd been wearing nothing but his tidy whities. I don't know why. Maybe he'd been shaken out of bed to chase me. This time, he was prepared for battle. From the waist down, he wore standard Greek battle gear, a kilt-like apron of leather and metal flaps, bronze greaves covering his legs, and tightly wrapped leather sandals. His top was all bull, hair and hide and muscle leading to a head so large he should have toppled over just from the weight of his horns. He seemed larger than the last time I'd seen him, 10 feet tall at least. A double-bladed axe was strapped to his back, but he was too impatient to use it. As soon as he saw me circling overhead, or sniffed me, more likely, since his eyesight was bad, he bellowed and picked up a white limousine.
"Blackjack, dive!" I yelled. "What?"
the Pegasus asked.
"No way! Could he... Holy horse feed!"
We were at least 100 feet up, but the limo came sailing toward us, flipping fender over fender like a 2-ton boomerang. Annabeth and Pork Pie swerved madly to the left, while Blackjack tucked in his wings and plunged. The limo sailed over my head, missing by maybe 2 inches. It cleared the suspension lines of the bridge and fell toward the East River. Monsters jeered and shouted, and the Minotaur picked up another car. Drop us behind the lines with the Apollo cabin, I told Blackjack. Stay in earshot, but get out of danger.
I ain't gonna argue, boss.
Blackjack swooped down behind an overturned school bus where a couple of campers were hiding. Annabeth and I leaped off as soon as our Pegasi's hooves touched the pavement. Then Blackjack and Pork Pie soared into the night sky. Michael Yu ran up to us. He was definitely the shortest commando I'd ever seen. He had a bandage cut on his arm, his ferrety face was smeared with soot, and his quiver was almost empty, but he was smiling like he was having a great time.
"Glad you could join us," he said. "Where are the other reinforcements?"
"For now, we're it," I said.
"Then we're dead," he said.
"You still have your flying chariot?"
Annabeth asked.
"Nah," Michael said. "Left it at camp. I told Clarice she could have it. Whatever, you know, not worth fighting about anymore. But she said it was too late. We'd insulted her honor for the last time or some stupid thing."
"Least you tried," I said. Michael shrugged.
"Yeah, well, I called her some names when she said she still wouldn't fight. I doubt that helped. Here come the uglies."
He drew an arrow and launched it toward the enemy. The arrow made a screaming sound as it flew. When it landed, it unleashed a blast like a power cord on an electric guitar magnified through the world's largest speakers. The nearest cars exploded. Monsters dropped their weapons and clasped their ears in pain. Some ran, others disintegrated on the spot.
"That was my last sonic arrow," Michael said.
"A gift from your dad?" I asked. "God of music?" Michael grinned wickedly.
"Loud music can be bad for you. Unfortunately, it doesn't always kill."
Sure enough, most monsters were regrouping, shaking off their confusion.
"We have to fall back," Michael said. "I've got Kayla and Austin setting traps farther down the bridge."
"No," I said. "Bring your campers forward to this position and wait for my signal. We're going to drive the enemy back to Brooklyn." Michael laughed.
"How do you plan to do that?"
I drew my sword.
"Percy," Annabeth said, "let me come with you."
"Too dangerous," I said. "Besides, I need you to help Michael coordinate the defensive line. I'll distract the monsters. You group up here. Move the sleeping mortals out of the way. Then you can start picking off monsters while I'll keep them focused on me. If anybody can do all that, you can." Michael snorted.
"Thanks a lot."
I kept my eyes on Annabeth. She nodded reluctantly.
"All right, get moving."
Before I could lose my courage, I said, "Don't I get a kiss for good luck? It's kind of a tradition, right?" I figured she would punch me. Instead, she drew her knife and stared at the army marching toward us.
"Come back alive, seaweed brain. Then we'll see."
I figured it was the best offer I would get, so I stepped out from behind the school bus. I walked up the bridge in plain sight, straight toward the enemy. When the Minotaur saw me, his eyes burned with hate. He bellowed, a sound that was somewhere between a yell, a moo, and a really loud belch.
"Hey, Beef Boy!" I shouted back. "Didn't I kill you already?"
He pounded his fist into the hood of a Lexus, and it crumpled like aluminum foil. A few Dracenae flew flaming javelins at me. I knocked them aside. A hellhound lunged, and I sidestepped. I could have stabbed it, but I hesitated. "This is not Mrs. O'Leary," I reminded myself. "This is an untamed monster. It will kill me and all my friends." It pounced again. This time I brought Riptide up in a deadly arc. The hellhound disintegrated into dust and fur. More monsters surged forward, snakes and giants and telkines, but the Minotaur roared at them and they backed off.
"One-on-one," I called, "just like old times."
The Minotaur's nostrils quivered. He seriously needed to keep a pack of aloe vera Kleenex in his armor pocket, because that nose was wet and red and pretty gross. He unstrapped his axe and swung it around.
It was beautiful in a harsh, I'm gonna gut you like a fish kind of way. Each of its twin blades was shaped like an omega, the last letter of the Greek alphabet. Maybe that was because the axe would be the last thing his victims ever saw. The shaft was about the same height as the minotaur, bronze wrapped in leather. Tied around the base of each blade were lots of bead necklaces. I realized they were Camp Half-Blood beads, necklaces taken from defeated demigods. I was so mad. I imagined my eyes glowing just like the minotaur's. I raised my sword. The monster army cheered for the minotaur, but the sound died when I dodged his first swing and sliced his axe in half, right between the handholds. Moo? He grunted. Ha! I spun and kicked him in the snout. He staggered backward, trying to regain his footing, then lowered his head to charge. He never got the chance. My sword flashed, slicing off one horn, then the other. He tried to grab me. I rolled away, picking up half of his broken axe. The other monsters backed up in stunned silence, making a circle around us. The minotaur bellowed in rage. He was never very smart to begin with, but now his anger made him reckless. He charged me, and I ran for the edge of the bridge, breaking through a line of Dracaenae. The minotaur must have smelled victory. He thought I was trying to get away. His minions cheered. At the edge of the bridge, I turned and braced the axe against the railing to receive his charge. The minotaur didn't even slow down. Crunch! He looked down in surprise at the axe handle sprouting from his breastplate. Thanks for playing, I told him. I lifted him by his legs and tossed him over the side of the bridge. Even as he fell, he was disintegrating, turning back into dust, his essence returning to Tartarus. I turned toward his army. It was now roughly 199-1. I did the natural thing. I charged them. You're gonna ask how the invincible thing worked, if I magically dodged every weapon, or if the weapons hit me and just didn't harm me. Honestly, I don't remember. All I knew was that I wasn't gonna let these monsters invade my hometown. I sliced through armor like it was made of paper. Snake women exploded. Hellhounds melted to shadow. I slashed and stabbed and whirled, and I might have even laughed once or twice, a crazy laugh that scared me as much as it did my enemies. I was aware of the Apollo campers behind me, shooting arrows, disrupting every attempt by the enemy to rally. Finally, the monsters turned and fled, about 20 left alive out of 200. I followed with the Apollo campers at my heels. Yes! Yelled Michael Yu. That's what I'm talking about! We drove them back toward the Brooklyn side of the bridge. The sky was growing pale in the east. I could see the toll stations ahead. Percy! Annabeth yelled. You've already routed them! Pull back! We're overextended! Some part of me knew she was right, but I was doing so well, I wanted to destroy every last monster. Then I saw the crowd at the base of the bridge. The retreating monsters were running straight toward their reinforcements. It was a small group, maybe 30 or 40 demigods in battle armor, mounted on skeletal horses. One of them held a purple banner with the black scythe design. The lead horseman trotted forward. He took off his helm, and I recognized Kronos himself, his eyes like molten gold. Annabeth and the Apollo campers faltered. The monsters we'd been pursuing reached the Titan's line and were absorbed into the new force. Kronos gazed in our direction. He was a quarter mile away, but I swear I could see him smile. Now, I said, we pull back. The Titan Lord's men drew their swords and charged. The hooves of their skeletal horses thundered against the pavement. Our archers shot a volley, bringing down several of the enemy, but they just kept riding. Retreat, I told my friends. I'll hold them. In a matter of seconds, they were on me. Michael and his archers tried to retreat, but Annabeth stayed right beside me, fighting with her knife and mirrored shield as we slowly backed up the bridge. Kronos' cavalry swirled around us, slashing and yelling insults. The Titan himself advanced leisurely, like he had all the time in the world. Being the Lord of Time, I guess he did. I tried to wound his men, not kill. That slowed me down, but these weren't monsters. They were demigods who'd fallen under Kronos' spell. I couldn't see faces under their battle helmets, but some of them had probably been my friends. I slashed the legs off their horses and made the skeletal mounts disintegrate. After the first few demigods took a spill, the rest figured out they'd better dismount and fight me on foot. Annabeth and I stayed shoulder to shoulder, facing opposite directions. A dark shape passed over me, and I dared to glance up. Blackjack and Pork Pie were swooping in, kicking our enemies in the helmets and flying away like very large kamikaze pigeons. We'd almost made it to the middle of the bridge when something strange happened. I felt a chill down my spine, like that old saying about someone walking on your grave. Behind me, Annabeth cried out in pain. Annabeth! I turned in time to see her fall, clutching her arm. A demigod with a bloody knife stood over her. In a flash, I understood what had happened. He'd been trying to stab me. Judging from the position of his blade, he would have taken me. Maybe by sheer luck? In the small of my back, my only weak point. Annabeth had intercepted the knife with her own body. But why? She didn't know about my weak spot. No one did. I locked eyes with the enemy demigod. He wore an eye patch under his war helm. Ethan Nakamura, the son of Nemesis. Somehow he'd survived the explosion on the Princess Andromeda. I slammed him in the face with my sword hilt so hard I dented his helm. Get back! I slashed the air in a wide arc, driving the rest of the demigods away from Annabeth. No one touches her!
Interesting, Kronos said.
He towered above me on a skeletal horse, his scythe in one hand. He studied the scene with narrowed eyes, as if he could sense that I'd just come close to death, the way a wolf can smell fear.
Bravely fought, Percy Jackson, he said. But it's time to surrender, or the girl dies.
Percy, don't, Annabeth groaned. Her shirt was soaked with blood. I had to get her out of here.
Blackjack! I yelled.
As fast as light, the Pegasus swooped down and clamped his teeth on the straps of Annabeth's armor. They soared away over the river before the enemy could even react. Kronos snarled.
Someday soon, I am going to make Pegasus soup. But in the meantime,
he dismounted, his scythe glistening in the dawn light.
I'll settle for another dead demigod.
I met his first strike with Riptide. The impact shook the entire bridge, but I held my ground. Kronos' smile wavered. With a yell, I kicked his legs out from under him. His scythe skittered across the pavement. I stabbed downward, but he rolled aside and regained his footing. His scythe flew back to his hands.
So,
he studied me, looking mildly annoyed.
You had the courage to visit the Styx. I had to pressure Luke in many ways to convince him. If only you had supplied my host body instead. But no matter. I am still more powerful. I am a Titan!
He struck the bridge with the butt of his scythe, and a wave of pure force blasted me backward. Cars went careening. Demigods, even Luke's own men, were blown off the edge of the bridge. Suspension cords whipped around, and I skidded halfway back to Manhattan. I got unsteadily to my feet. The remaining Apollo campers had almost made it to the end of the bridge, except for Michael Yu, who was perched on one of the suspension cables a few yards away from me. His last arrow was notched in his bow.
Michael, go! I screamed.
Percy, the bridge! He called.
It's already weak!
At first I didn't understand. Then I looked down and saw fissures in the pavement. Patches of the road were half-melted from Greek fire. The bridge had taken a beating from Kronos' blast and the exploding arrows.
"Break it!" Michael yelled. "Use your powers!"
It was a desperate thought. No way it would work, but I stabbed Riptide into the bridge. The magic blade sank to its hilt in asphalt. Salt water shot from the crack like it hit a geyser. I pulled out my blade, and the fissure grew. The bridge shook and began to crumble. Chunks the size of houses fell into the East River. Kronos' demigods cried out in alarm and scrambled backward. Some were knocked off their feet. Within a few seconds, a 50-foot chasm opened in the Williamsburg Bridge between Kronos and me. The vibrations died. Kronos' men crept to the edge and looked at the 130-foot drop into the river. I didn't feel safe, though. The suspension cables were still attached. The men could get across that way if they were brave enough. Or maybe Kronos had a magic way to span the gap. The Titan Lord studied the problem. He looked behind him at the rising sun, then smiled across the chasm. He raised his scythe in a mock salute.
"Until this evening, Jackson."
He mounted his horse, whirled around, and galloped back to Brooklyn, followed by his warriors. I turned to thank Michael Hugh, but the words died in my throat. 20 feet away, a bow lay in the street. Its owner was nowhere to be seen.
"No!"
I searched the wreckage on my side of the bridge. I stared down at the river. Nothing. I yelled in anger and frustration. The sound carried forever in the morning stillness. I was about to whistle for Blackjack to help me search when my mom's phone rang. The LCD display said I had a call from Finkelstein and Associates. Probably a demigod calling on a borrowed phone. I picked up, hoping for good news. Of course, I was wrong.
"Percy!"
Selena Beauregard sounded like she'd been crying.
"Plaza Hotel. You'd better come quickly and bring a healer from Apollo's cabin. It's Annabeth."
Chapter 12. Rachel Makes a Bad Deal. I grabbed Will Solace from the Apollo cabin and told the rest of his siblings to keep searching for Michael Yu. We borrowed a Yamaha FZ1 from a sleeping biker and drove to the Plaza Hotel at speeds that would have given my mom a heart attack. I'd never driven a motorcycle before, but it wasn't any harder than riding a Pegasus. Along the way, I noticed a lot of empty pedestals that usually held statues. Plan 23 seemed to be working. I didn't know if that was good or bad. It only took us 5 minutes to reach the plaza, an old-fashioned white stone hotel with a gabled blue roof, sitting at the southeast corner of Central Park. Tactically speaking, the plaza wasn't the best place for a headquarters. It wasn't the tallest building in town, or the most centrally located, but it had old-school style and had attracted a lot of famous demigods over the years, like the Beatles and Alfred Hitchcock. So I figured we were in good company. I gunned the Yamaha over the curb and swerved to a stop at the fountain outside the hotel. Will and I hopped off. The statue at the top of the fountain called down.
"Oh, fine. I suppose you want me to watch your bike, too."
She was a life-size bronze standing in the middle of a granite bowl. She wore only a bronze sheet around her legs, and she was holding a basket of metal fruit. I'd never paid her too much attention before. Then again, she'd never talked to me before.
"Are you supposed to be Demeter?" I asked.
A bronze apple sailed over my head.
"Everyone thinks I'm Demeter," she complained. "I'm Pompona, the Roman goddess of plenty. But why should you care? Nobody cares about the minor gods. If you cared about the minor gods, you wouldn't be losing this war. 3 cheers for Morpheus and Hecate, I say."
"Watch the bike," I told her.
Pompona cursed in Latin and threw more fruit as Will and I ran toward the hotel. I'd never actually been inside the plaza. The lobby was impressive, with the crystal chandeliers and the passed-out rich people, but I didn't pay much attention. A couple of hunters gave us directions to the elevators, and we rode up to the penthouse suites. Demigods had completely taken over the top floors. Campers and hunters were crashed out on sofas, washing up in the bathrooms, ripping silk draperies to bandage their wounds, and helping themselves to snacks and sodas from the minibars. A couple of timber wolves were drinking out of the toilets. I was relieved to see that so many of my friends had made it through the night alive, but everybody looked beat up.
Percy! Jake Mason clapped me on the shoulder. We're getting reports.
Later, I said. Where's Annabeth?
The terrace. She's alive, man, but...
I pushed past him. Under different circumstances, I would have loved the view from the terrace. It looked straight down onto Central Park. The morning was clear and bright, perfect for a picnic or a hike, or pretty much anything except fighting monsters. Annabeth lay on a lounge chair. Her face was pale and beaded with sweat. Even though she was covered in blankets, she shivered. Selena Beauregard was wiping her forehead with a cool cloth. Will and I pushed through a crowd of Athena kids. Will unwrapped Annabeth's bandages to examine the wound, and I wanted to faint. The bleeding had stopped, but the gash looked deep. The skin around the cut was a horrible shade of green. Annabeth, I choked up. She'd taken that knife from me. How could I have let that happen?
Poison on the dagger, she mumbled. Pretty stupid of me, huh?
Will Solace exhaled with relief.
It's not so bad, Annabeth. A few more minutes and we would have been in trouble, but the venom hasn't gotten past the shoulder yet. Just lie still. Somebody, hand me some nectar.
I grabbed a canteen. Will cleaned out the wound with the godly drink while I held Annabeth's hand.
Ow, she said. Ow, ow.
She gripped my fingers so tight they turned purple, but she stayed still, like Will asked. Selena muttered words of encouragement. Will put some silver paste over the wound and hummed words in ancient Greek, a hymn to Apollo. Then he applied fresh bandages and stood up shakily. The healing must have taken a lot of his energy. He looked almost as pale as Annabeth.
That should do it, he said, but we're going to need some mortal supplies.
He grabbed a piece of hotel stationery, jotted down some notes, and handed it to one of the Athena guys.
There's a Dwayne Reed on Fifth. Normally, I would never steal.
I would,
Travis volunteered. Will glared at him.
Leave cash or drachmas to pay, whatever you've got, but this is an emergency. I've got a feeling we're going to have a lot more people to treat.
Nobody disagreed. There was hardly a single demigod who hadn't already been wounded, except me.
Come on, guys, Travis Stoll said. Let's give Annabeth some space. We've got a drugstore to raid. I mean, visit.
The demigods shuffled back inside. Jake Mason grabbed my shoulder as he was leaving.
We'll talk later, but it's under control. I'm using Annabeth's shield to keep an eye on things. The enemy withdrew at sunrise, not sure why. We've got a lookout at each bridge and tunnel.
Thanks, man, I said. He nodded.
Just take your time.
He closed the terrace doors behind him, leaving Selena, Annabeth, and me alone. Selena pressed a cool cloth to Annabeth's forehead.
This is all my fault.
No, Annabeth said weakly.
Selena, how is it your fault? I've never been any good at camp, she murmured. Not like you or Percy. If I was a better fighter...
Her mouth trembled. Ever since Beckendorf died, she'd been getting worse, and every time I looked at her, it made me angry about his death all over again.
Her expression reminded me of glass, like she might break any minute. I swore to myself that if I ever found the spy who'd cost her boyfriend his life, I would give him to Mrs. O'Leary as a chew toy. "You're a great camper," I told Selena. "You're the best Pegasus rider we have, and you get along with people, believe me. Anyone who can make friends with Clarice has talent." She stared at me like I'd just given her an idea.
"That's it. We need the Ares cabin. I can talk to Clarice. I know I can convince her to help us."
"Whoa, Selena. Even if you could get off the island, Clarice is pretty stubborn. Once she gets angry..."
"Please," Selena said. "I can take a Pegasus. I know I can make it back to camp. Let me try."
I exchanged looks with Annabeth. She nodded slightly. I didn't like the idea. I didn't think Selena stood a chance of convincing Clarice to fight. On the other hand, Selena was so distracted right now that she would just get herself hurt in battle. Maybe sending her back to camp would give her something else to focus on. "All right," I told her. "I can't think of anybody better to try." Selena threw her arms around me. Then she pushed back awkwardly, glancing at Annabeth.
Sorry. Thank you, Percy. I won't let you down."
When she was gone, I knelt next to Annabeth and felt her forehead. She was still burning up.
"You're cute when you're worried," she muttered. "Your eyebrows get all scrunched together."
"You are not going to die while I owe you a favor," I said.
"Why did you take that knife?" "You would have done the same for me."
It was true. I guess we both knew it. Still, I felt like somebody was poking my heart with a cold metal rod.
"How did you know?" "Know what?"
I looked around to make sure we were alone. Then I leaned in close and whispered,
"My Achilles spot. If you hadn't taken that knife, I would have died."
She got a faraway look in her eyes. Her breath smelled of grapes, maybe from the nectar.
"I don't know, Percy. I just had this feeling you were in danger. Where's the spot?"
I wasn't supposed to tell anyone, but this was Annabeth. If I couldn't trust her, I couldn't trust anyone.
"The small of my back."
She lifted her hand.
"Where? Here?"
She put her hand on my spine, and my skin tingled. I moved her fingers to the one spot that grounded me to my mortal life. 1,000 volts of electricity seemed to arc through my body.
"You saved me," I said. "Thanks."
She removed her hand, but I kept holding it.
"So you owe me," she said weakly. "What else is new?"
We watched the sun come up over the city. The traffic should have been heavy by now, but there were no cars honking, no crowds bustling along the sidewalks. Far away, I could hear a car alarm echo through the streets. A plume of black smoke curled into the sky somewhere over Harlem. I wondered how many ovens had been left on when the Morpheus spell hit. How many people had fallen asleep in the middle of cooking dinner? Pretty soon, there would be more fires. Everyone in New York was in danger, and all those lives depended on us.
"You asked me why Hermes was mad at me," Annabeth said.
"Hey, you need to rest."
"No, I want to tell you. It's been bothering me for a long time."
She moved her shoulder and winced.
"Last year, Luke came to see me in San Francisco."
"In person?" I felt like she just hit me with a hammer. "He came to your house?"
"This was before we went into the labyrinth. Before..."
She faltered, but I knew what she meant. Before he turned into Kronos.
"He came under a flag of truce. He said he only wanted 5 minutes to talk. He looked scared, Percy. He told me Kronos was going to use him to take over the world. He said he wanted to run away, like the old days. He wanted me to come with him.
But you didn't trust him?
Of course not. I thought it was a trick. Plus, well, a lot of things had changed since the old days. I told Luke there was no way. He got mad. He said I might as well fight him right there, because it was the last chance I'd get.
Her forehead broke out in sweat again. The story was taking too much of her energy.
It's okay, I said. Try to get some rest. You don't understand, Percy. Hermes was right. Maybe if I'd gone with him, I could have changed his mind. Or I had a knife. Luke was unarmed. I could have...
Killed him? I said. You know that wouldn't have been right. She squeezed her eyes shut.
Luke said Kronos would use him like a stepping stone. Those were his exact words. Kronos would use Luke and become even more powerful.
He did that, I said. He possessed Luke's body.
But what if Luke's body is only a transition? What if Kronos has a plan to become even more powerful? I could have stopped him. The war is my fault.
Her story made me feel like I was back in the sticks, slowly dissolving. I remembered last summer when the two-headed god, Janus, had warned Annabeth she would have to make a major choice. And that had happened after she saw Luke. Pan had also said something to her. You will play a great role, though it may not be the role you imagined. I wanted to ask her about the vision Hestia had shown me, about her early days with Luke and Thalia. I knew it had something to do with my prophecy, but I didn't understand what. Before I could get up my nerve, the terrace door opened. Connor Stoll stepped through. Percy! He glanced at Annabeth like he didn't want to say anything bad in front of her, but I could tell he wasn't bringing good news. Mrs. O'Leary just came back with Grover. I think you should talk to him. Grover was having a snack in the living room. He was dressed for battle in an armored shirt made from tree bark and twist ties, with his wooden cudgel and his reed pipes hanging from his belt. The Demeter cabin had whipped up a whole buffet in the hotel kitchens, everything from pizza to pineapple ice cream. Unfortunately, Grover was eating the furniture. He'd already chewed the stuffing off a fancy chair and was now gnawing the armrest. Dude, I said, we're only borrowing this place. Blah! He had stuffing all over his face. Sorry, Percy, it's just... Louis XVI furniture? Delicious. Plus, I always eat furniture when I get... When you get nervous, I said. Yeah, I know. So what's up? He clopped on his hooves. I heard about Annabeth. Is she... She's going to be fine. She's resting. Grover took a deep breath. That's good. I've mobilized most of the nature spirits in the city. Well, the ones that will listen to me anyway. He rubbed his forehead. I had no idea acorns could hurt so much. Anyway, we're helping out as much as we can. He told me about the skirmishes they'd seen. Mostly they'd been covering Uptown, where we didn't have enough demigods. Hellhounds had appeared in all sorts of places, shadow traveling inside our lines, and the dryads and satyrs had been fighting them off. A young dragon had appeared in Harlem, and a dozen wood nymphs died before the monster was finally defeated. As Grover talked, Thalia entered the room with two of her lieutenants. She nodded to me grimly, went outside to check on Annabeth, and came back in. She listened while Grover completed his report, the details getting worse and worse. We lost 20 satyrs against some giants at Fort Washington, he said, his voice trembling. Almost half my kinsmen. River spirits drown the giants in the end, but... Thalia shouldered her bow. Percy, Kronos' forces are still gathering at every bridge and tunnel. And Kronos isn't the only Titan. One of my hunters spotted a huge man in golden armor mustering an army on the Jersey shore. I'm not sure who he is, but he radiates power like only a Titan or god. I remembered the golden Titan from my dream, the one on Mount Othrys who erupted into flames. Great, I said. Any good news? Thalia shrugged. We've sealed off the subway tunnels into Manhattan. My best trappers took care of it. Also, it seems like the enemy is waiting for tonight to attack. I think Luke... She caught herself. I mean, Kronos needs time to regenerate after each fight. He's still not comfortable with his new form. It's taking a lot of his power to slow time around the city. Grover nodded. Most of his forces are more powerful at night, too, but they'll be back after sundown. I tried to think clearly. Okay, any word from the gods? Thalia shook her head. I know Lady Artemis would be here if she could, Athena too, but Zeus has ordered them to stay at his side. The last I heard, Typhon was destroying the Ohio River Valley. He should reach the Appalachian Mountains by midday. So, at best, I said, we've got another 2 days before he arrives. Jake Mason cleared his throat. He'd been standing there so silently, I'd almost forgotten he was in the room.
Percy, something else, he said. The way Kronos showed up at the Williamsburg Bridge, like he knew you were going there, and he shifted his forces to our weakest points. As soon as we deployed, he changed tactics. He barely touched the Lincoln Tunnel, where the hunters were strong. He went for our weakest spots, like he knew.
Like he had inside information, I said. The spy.
What spy?
Thalia demanded. I told her about the silver charm Kronos had shown me, the communication device.
That's bad, she said. Very bad. It could be anyone, Jake said. We were all standing there when Percy gave the orders.
But what can we do? Grover asked. Frisk every demigod until we find a scythe charm?
They all looked at me, waiting for a decision. I couldn't afford to show how panicked I felt, even if things seemed hopeless.
We keep fighting, I said. We can't obsess about this spy. If we're suspicious of each other, we'll just tear ourselves apart. You guys were awesome last night. I couldn't ask for a braver army. Let's set up a rotation for the watches. Rest up while you can. We've got a long night ahead of us.
The demigods mumbled agreement. They went their separate ways to sleep or eat or repair their weapons.
Percy, you too, Thalia said. We'll keep an eye on things. Go lie down. We need you in good shape for tonight.
I didn't argue too hard. I found the nearest bedroom and crashed on the canopied bed. I thought I was too wired to sleep, but my eyes closed almost immediately. In my dream, I saw Nico D'Angelo alone in the gardens of Hades. He just dug a hole in one of Persephone's flower beds, which I didn't figure would make the queen very happy. He poured a goblet of wine into the hole and began to chant,
"Let the dead taste again. Let them rise and take this offering. Maria D'Angelo, show yourself."
White smoke gathered. A human figure formed, but it wasn't Nico's mother. It was a girl with dark hair, olive skin, and the silvery clothes of a hunter.
"Bianca," Nico said, "but..."
"Don't summon our mother, Nico," she warned. "She is the one spirit you are forbidden to see."
"Why?" he demanded. "What's our father hiding?"
"Pain," Bianca said. "Hatred. A curse that stretches back to the great prophecy."
"What do you mean?" Nico said. "I have to know."
"The knowledge will only hurt you. Remember what I said. Holding grudges is a fatal flaw for children of Hades."
"I know that," Nico said, but I'm not the same as I used to be, Bianca. Stop trying to protect me.
Brother, you don't understand.
Nico swiped his hand through the mist, and Bianca's image dissipated. Maria D'Angelo, he said again. Speak to me. A different image formed. It was a scene rather than a single ghost. In the mist, I saw Nico and Bianca as little children, playing in the lobby of an elegant hotel, chasing each other around marble columns. A woman sat on a nearby sofa. She wore a black dress, gloves, and a black veiled hat like a star from an old 1940s movie. She had Bianca's smile and Nico's eyes. On a chair next to her sat a large, oily man in a black pinstripe suit. With a shock, I realized it was Hades. He was leaning toward the woman, using his hands as he talked, like he was agitated.
"Please, my dear," he said. "You must come to the underworld. I don't care what Persephone thinks. I can keep you safe there."
"No, my love," she spoke with an Italian accent. "Raise our children in the land of the dead. I will not do this."
"Maria, listen to me. The war in Europe has turned the other gods against me. A prophecy has been made. My children are no longer safe. Poseidon and Zeus have forced me into an agreement. None of us are to have demigod children ever again."
"But you already have, Nico and Bianca. Surely..."
"No. The prophecy warns of a child who turns 16. Zeus has decreed that the children I currently have must be turned over to Camp Half-Blood for proper training. But I know what he means. At best, they'll be watched, imprisoned, turned against their father. Even more likely, he will not take a chance. He won't allow my demigod children to reach 16. He'll find a way to destroy them, and I won't risk that."
"Certamente," Maria said. "We will stay together. Zeus is un imbecile."
I couldn't help admiring her courage, but Hades glanced nervously at the ceiling.
"Maria, please. I told you Zeus gave me a deadline of last week to turn over the children. His wrath will be horrible, and I cannot hide you forever. As long as you are with the children, you are in danger, too."
Maria smiled, and again, it was creepy how much she looked like her daughter.
"You are a god, my love. You will protect us. But I will not take Nico and Bianca to the underworld."
Hades wrung his hands.
"Then there is another option. I know a place in the desert where time stands still. I could send the children there, just for a while, for their own safety, and we could be together. I will build you a golden palace by the Styx."
Maria D'Angelo laughed gently.
"You are a kind man, my love. A generous man. The other gods should see you as I do, and they would not fear you so. But Nico and Bianca need their mother. Besides, they are only children. The gods wouldn't really hurt them."
"You don't know my family," Hades said darkly. "Please, Maria, I can't lose you."
She touched his lips with her fingers.
"You will not lose me. Wait for me while I get my purse. Watch the children."
She kissed the Lord of the Dead and rose from the sofa. Hades watched her walk upstairs, as if her every step away caused him pain. A moment later, he tensed. The children stopped playing as if they sensed something, too.
"No,"
Hades said. But even his godly powers were too slow. He only had time to erect a wall of black energy around the children before the hotel exploded. The force was so violent, the entire mist image dissolved. When it came into focus again, I saw Hades kneeling in the ruins, holding the broken form of Maria D'Angelo. Fire still burned all around him, lightning flashed across the sky, and thunder rumbled. Little Nico and Bianca stared at their mother uncomprehendingly.
The Fury Electo appeared behind them, hissing and flapping her leathery wings. The children didn't seem to notice her.
Zeus!
Hades shook his fist at the sky.
I will crush you for this. I will bring her back. My lord, you cannot,
Electo warned.
You, of all immortals, must respect